Hello everyone and welcome back to the show formerly known as the Fantasy Premier League Preview Show. The lockdown period has given us a chance to look back over the year we've had and what we could improve upon for next season. We felt that the worst part about our show was its name. Too long, not memorable, and it didn't look good on any of the graphic mock-ups we've had. So we'd like to formally welcome you to the inaugural episode of the Fantasy Rumble. Beautiful. Beautiful. Just to clarify, we are in no way associated with the much more successful Football Ramble podcast. If we were, we wouldn't have to worry about paying any of the bills. At its core, the show will stay the same throughout the season, whenever that is going to be. We'll be broadcasting live on Radio Energy once a week, with episodes being recorded and uploaded to Energy Sport. We'll pick out some key fixtures, discuss them, and give you our advice on how to get the most out of your fantasy teams for the game week in question. I keep saying we when it's just been me talking, so I'll reintroduce some of our esteemed hosts. We've got three of the five other Motley crew here today, with the first man being the reigning champion of our personal league, which is just as well considering he's still waiting on his team to win their first league title. Graham Sinclair, how are you?
Hello, hello there, Jack. How are you doing,
Colin? Just started there a wee bit. Good to start.
I did. I'm in my bed, so if I fall asleep, you don't hear from me, you know why.
No, we'll just bring you back to argue a case about Jordan Henderson. You'll wake up at that point, surely, once we get into it.
No argument to be had there.
No argument to be had. How have you been keeping?
Mate, I'm addicted to Football Manager, and it basically is my life.
Good.
Yeah. I have played. I am now at, just quickly, I think 220 hours and one save in a month, which is about,
wow.
Eight and a half days.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, that's quite impressive. You say you're in your bed. Have you moved much from your bed? That is the question.
I played Football Manager in a chair one day. That
was
fun.
Well, there you go. There we go. It's an upgraded setting, I suppose. You're in a chair rather than in your bed, so it's different.
I broke the chair, sitting around back in the bed.
I don't even have anything to say to that. I'm just going to move on and introduce our next host. So, next up, we've got our very own BTEC Mark Goldbridge, and as flimsy on his opinion and so sharp as toilet paper, Struan Garvey. How are you, mate?
Oh, I was really hoping that wasn't going to be me based on that intro there.
I mean, what else? Who else would it be? A BTEC Goldbridge?
Oh, man. I'm doing okay.
You're bald now. You shaved your head.
Yeah, it's actually going back in quite a lot. And see, today when I saw it in the mirror, I actually kind of thought, like, I reckon I might keep it this short.
Really?
But I've since changed my opinion.
Since changed your opinion since today.
Kind of miss it, like.
You're backing up being flimsy on your opinions there. Like
I flip flop like crazy.
Just like Neymar, a prime Neymar in the World Cup.
Oh yeah,
I love that. Finally, we've got the man who infamously triple captained Kyle Walker, netting himself a total of 3 points in the process. A man we all rip into more than anyone else, and an even bigger Billy Gilmour fan than me, if that's possible. Taylor Murray, how are you, mate?
I will shoot that off one day. I'm going to have to get rid of that.
Just pick a better triple captain next season, you'll be fine.
Can I interview on Taylor's behalf? Did you not have Sadio Mane? In fact, Struan listened to me and went for Trent, I think. Did you not have Sadio Mane, Jack?
I did, but the problem with that was I triple captained him when he had a double game week. But then he got injured. So that wasn't really...
That's your fault. You should have seen the injury coming.
It was a clever pick. But it just didn't go well for me. Whereas Taylor's was just ridiculous. Who triple captains a right back?
To be honest,
me and Graham did.
I mean,
we got lots of points for it.
Okay. Yeah, this hasn't started well. Good. There we go. So Taylor, you happy to be back with us? Happy to be back podcasting again?
Oh, feels a wee bit of normality back in my life now.
It's good.
Feels like it's going to be Groundhog Day. Yeah. This is the difference we've been waiting for.
This is it. And we're very glad to be bringing it to you here on Energy Sport. So we'll give you a rundown of what today's show will entail, and it'll obviously be something a bit different since we've got no football to preview. A common theme among football writers and broadcasters at the moment is their team of the season so far, in quotation marks. And today we are going to be no different. We're going to do it quite like how the BBC handled the all-time Premier League 11 a couple of years ago. So what I've done, I've compiled a short list of players per position, and we're going to debate who deserves to be in our agreed team. So we're not making individual teams today. We're going to be coming up with an agreed-upon team between us all, which is going to be quite interesting. We are having no rules on a number of players per team because, realistically, there's too many good Liverpool players to leave out. And it all comes down to who argues their case best. What we're going to do, we're going to tweet out our final team once this episode goes live. So if you agree, disagree, or want to share your own team of the season with us, tweet us at the new handle, boys, the new handle. I really should have double checked this before I started the recording, but it's going to be at Fantasy Ramble ENRG. It reads better, that, doesn't it? It reads better than the one we've got now.
It just sounds good. Yeah. Sounds clean. I like it.
I've already forgotten what our other name was.
Yeah, so have I. Onwards. We've already agreed a formation for our team. We're going to stick with modern football's 4-4-2, the 4-3-3. We're kind of going to interpret what variation of a 4-3-3 once we've got our team selected. And furthermore, despite it being a fantasy football show, we're not going to be making our decisions based on total points or price or anything like that, any of the fantasy football factors. That being said, we need to highlight two heroes of the last fantasy season, those two being Martin Kelly at Crystal Palace and Lord John Lundstrom at Sheffield United, for being absolute heroes in terms of fantasy football in the past season. I think I had one, if not both, since week one because of the price of them.
I didn't have Lundstrom from the start, but he was in my team very quickly.
He was in my, yeah. I think I must have had Kelly day one, and then Lundstrom came in quickly.
I think I had Kelly initially and got rid of him.
Yeah, Lundstrom was in, I think, second game week for me, and then I kept him in for all that time, just forgetting about changing him, and then it just paid off.
Why would you want to?
Yeah, no, it's like, at first I think I was just concentrating on my forwards, forgot about him, and then he just popped up and started doing it, and then he just cemented himself.
It was that day he got two goals, and he catapulted me up a couple of places that I'll just never forget him for. An absolute god amongst men. Right, I reckon we crack on. We start and get this team going. Right, as with any team, we start with the goalkeeper. And to be honest, it's not been a fantastic year for top-tier goalkeepers. I mean, Lloris missed a large part of the season with a broken arm. David De Gea's kind of fallen off the pedestal a bit. Bern Leno had a massively average year, and the less said about Kepa, the better. But we've got four on the shortlist, but we're all kind of under the impression that it's just going to be between two. So our shortlist is consisting of Nick Pope from Burnley, Ederson at Manchester City, Alisson at Liverpool, and Dean Henderson at Sheffield United. 40 clean sheets combined, and a combined total of 254 saves between the four. But, boys, who is it between? It's between two.
It's Dean Henderson is one of them.
Dean Henderson and Alisson. Alisson is the other. Does anyone want to throw in their first, well, their selection? Graham, I'll come to you since you're the only person in this call that has their club's goalkeeper in the shortlist. Are you going with Alisson or are you going with Henderson?
I'm going to go with Alisson.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Alisson. I'll give you why. Alisson, I don't think you should disagree, is the best keeper in the league. I think if you were to compare it to, he's the best keeper in the league. He's better than Henderson this season for a few reasons. Henderson's a great shot stopper. Alisson doesn't need to be a great shortstopper because his position is unbelievable. Not seeing a keeper like it. He really has to make it. Really has to make a good save. So, for that reason, what he does, it doesn't look as flashy compared to Henderson. So it maybe doesn't get as much credit. He hasn't played as much because of injury, but when he has played, Liverpool keep clean sheets. And thirdly, I think the biggest advantage, which is why I would give him the run ahead of Henderson, is that Alisson is wonderful with the ball at his feet. Emphasised by the assist to Mo Salah in January. I think the footwork is the biggest reason why I take Alisson as my goalkeeper ahead of Dean Henderson.
It's a strong argument. It's a very strong argument. I am one to believe that Struan Garvey might have a different argument to present.
I've gone for Henderson, who technically is Man United, but of course Sheffield United this season.
We're not going on technicalities.
Season.
No, we're not going on technicalities. We're taking from Andy Tate. He got the job in a technicality. We're not giving jobs on technicalities.
What I feel about Henderson is I've been watching him for a few seasons, just being on loan at Shrewsbury 2 years ago, last season in the Championship, and this was his first season in the Premier League, only 22 when it started. And I think he's hit the ground running in a team that's not... They were probably expected for relegation to begin with, and he's been a massive part of keeping them there. One of the highlights as well that I would point out is in the game against Liverpool at the start of the season when he made an absolute howler against Wijnaldum, and the way Chris Wilder spoke about it, you could clearly see the change.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And I think from then, he's just been pretty solid throughout. He's basically not put himself in that England team, but I think he could easily demand the number one jersey. And I think a lot of people would be happy with that over Pickford. But there's the easy argument as well of saying Alisson's behind a much stronger defence. But as we saw with Adrian, Alisson is definitely a very good keeper.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But I just think I'd give it to Henderson. First season, very young. And he's just really performed really well.
I'm backing that up. I've gone for Henderson myself. I mean, I kind of highlighted the fact that he'd been touted for being England's number one after, as you said, Stuart, just one season in the top flight. And I think, given time, considering the Euros have been moved to next summer as well, I think by the time that comes around, he will have taken the number one jersey from Jordan Pickford quite convincingly. Something as well from Henderson is distribution is something to be admired. I think over the season, I checked a couple of stats and he had, out of the keepers on our shortlist, the best, the most successful amount of long passes. So his distribution has been good. He had 191 successful long passes, averaging over 7 per game. And just a couple of his individual highlights that come to mind is one-handed save from a Philip Billing effort against Bournemouth. Basically his entire performance at Anfield, where he denied Salah on multiple occasions, Mane on multiple occasions, went on to lose the game, but in those moments he just shone so brightly. His performance against City as well, saving that penalty from Jesus, I think it was, that was taking that penalty at the time. That's chopped and changed so much this season. And I think he's so good in individual situations, one-on-ones. He's been known to kind of rush out and then do really well, saving with his feet, just very, very quick reactionary. That's my opinion. That's why I'd put Henderson in. Taylor, who are you saying for this?
It's a very big tough up against two class goalkeepers. You've got arguably one of the best goalkeepers in the world, putting in one of the best teams in the world, and Alisson. Then on the other hand, you've got an outstanding goalkeeper that's just proved himself in his first season in the Premier League. But I'm going to have to lean towards Henderson, I think. I just think, as a player, when you're looking at him, he looks so assured for being so young. And he's made some crucial game-winning saves. So has Alisson. But given the team that Dean Henderson is playing in, and basically what they've done in the first season, he's been a vital part to that. And he doesn't, as Shrewen said, have a world-class defence in front of him. So it's essentially, he has had to pull out some amazing saves. As you said earlier, Bournemouth's Philip Billing's effort, that was an unreal save for his one-handed to tip that over the bar. But the argument could be the fact that Liverpool didn't look their best under Alisson, and under Adrian, and Alisson basically reassured them. But I just, going with the fact is, you have to look at the team, the players have got around them, and just basically what's happened over this season, I feel like Henderson has performed a lot better than Alisson, given basically what he's been presented with. I'm not going to argue, if Alisson was in Henderson's shoes in that team, he'd probably win it as well, because I have no doubt he would stop like everything that came towards him as well, because he is arguably one of the best goalkeepers in the world, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to have to lean towards Henderson just mostly because I think it's just mostly down to the team that he's with has basically helped him and how he's performed with the players he's got around him.
So that kind of wraps it up. That's a 3-1 majority. Graham, have you got anything else that you want to present case?
I think that's absolutely fair. I think there's other battles. I think this one was pretty much a 50-50 for me. I went for Alisson just because I thought you guys would go for Henderson. He definitely deserves it. He's played more games. I think there's maybe a little bit of a, we're going to get lots of Liverpool players in, so let's just side with the guy from a different team. Although that's not to diminish Henderson at all.
Absolutely not. And it's also not to diminish the fact that both Nick Pope and Ederson, as we previously mentioned, have had very good seasons. Nick Pope, of course, leading the league in terms of clean sheets with 11 at the moment. So while they've both had good individual seasons, I remember Ederson's performance against Crystal Palace being one of particular note. It's just really come down to Alisson and Dean Henderson for whoever it's going to be that wins this accolades. And we've gone with Dean Henderson. So that's our first player pick, Dean Henderson in goal. We'll move on to fullbacks. And I've kind of lumped all of these in together because, again, it's not been a massively outstanding year for fullbacks. But I'll read out who we've got. on the shortlist this year for the fullbacks from us, we have got Trent Alexander-Arnold, Andy Robertson, Ricardo Pereira, Ben Chilwell, Matt Doherty, and Aaron Wan-Bissaka. Let's go to right back first, because I think this is a done case. This is an opening shot case here.
I think they're both done, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I would agree. I think I'll probably have more of a conversation about left back, but right back, Trent. Easy money.
I would agree that he's definitely been the best one, but just to kind of play devil's advocate, bringing up Pereira and Wan-Bissaka, I think Ricardo Pereira for me is one of the most complete fullbacks in the league. I mean, you talk about Trent going forward is the best attacker fullback in the league. Wan-Bissaka is the best defensive. I think Pereira is that blend of both. He can go forward and he can defend a lot, and I think he's been crucial to that Leicester side, and I think he doesn't get as much praise as the other two.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I think he is a very underrated player.
So I think, like, obviously Trent Alexander-Arnold is the best. You know, he's had such a good season, but if somebody was to put Ricardo Pereira in that, it would obviously get a few eyebrows raised, but he has actually had a really good season, and I think there could definitely be a case made for him on the right-hand side ahead of both.
I would agree. Like, Ricardo Pereira, he's had a very, very good season, getting in amongst the goals and the assists, and he's been a fair contribution to where Leicester are sitting in the league table just now, sitting in third. But you just can't look past Trent Alexander-Arnold in this category. Already with, 27 games in, he's matched the assist record from a defender that he broke last season. So he's already taken what he did last season and gone and equaled it with less games played, and would have probably realistically gone on to break that again. And he's a player, for the first time in my life watching football, I realised that a game could be run from right back. His performance against Leicester in December was genuinely unbelievable. I don't really think I've seen many fullback performances like it, but that's just what I'm thinking, Graham. You'll have seen a lot more of him than
us. I think you're spot on what you said. I think he's a generational right back. And I don't think that's hyperbole. I don't think hyperbole. I think that's genuine. I don't think I've ever seen a right back that can dictate the play, has the passing range. Some of his passes, second goal against Southampton, the goal against Man City that Salah scored in the header, second goal in the derby, his passing range is unbelievable. It's only one player that I think we'll get to that is better in the league at passing from right back. And yeah, I agree with you, Pereira's been excellent. But you mentioned the Leicester game. Pereira hasn't had a game like that where he just completely controls it. And I think without that game, Trent would still be ahead. But that game is just a perfect example. Like, Trent is clearly the best right back in the Prem and the world.
Oh, he's gone the world. Well, that's a conversation for another day, I think. Taylor, what are your thoughts? Are you going to weigh in the right back debate?
100%. I was joking earlier when I said Matthew Loughton, but Alexander Arnold is 100%. 100% best. I'm going to agree with you. I think he's one of the best right backs in the world at the moment. But going with the argument in the Premier League, everybody talks about how Aaron Wan-Bissaka is so good at defending and basically how he's so good at tackling and all of that. Trent Alexander-Arnold is only 1% behind his tackle success than Aaron Wan-Bissaka. So that shows the fact he can defend and tackle as well. And basically, he's that good at getting forward. His crosses are unreal. He's accurate at long balls. He's like out this world. It's just that switch from Alexander-Arnold to Mane is becoming an iconic duo. Basically, for him to put the ball basically diagonal, it's like a reincarnation of Gerrard at right back. That's the way I look at it. He's got that passing about him. Like, everybody knows Gerrard's basic passing range. He hits these diagonals. That's the way I look at Alexander-Arnold. He's just got that about him, and he's a reliable player. I don't think, Graham, you can back me up on this, I don't think he's been out injured a game, or he might have missed one.
I think he missed one or two, and he's been rested for a couple of games.
He's played all 29 in the league so far.
The only one was a sub appearance in the league, which he came on because I think Gomez got injured, or Dejan Lovren got injured.
Yeah, he's such a reliable player at a young age, and you and Struan said that he can control a game from right back, which is unbelievable difficult to influence a game from a full back. It's like, as Scotland, we've got our best player at left back, and we talk about, oh, that's the one position we can't influence anything on. Well, it's proven the fact that it can happen if you got a player basically as good as Alexander Arnold.
Right, that kind of wraps that conversation for right back up. We'll move over to left back, where we only had really two options in Andy Robertson and Ben Chilwell. I think we're all agreed that, as Taylor said, he kind of starts our country, he kind of starts the attacks for our country from left back, and I think it's very much the same for Liverpool. I think Andy Robertson goes in, personally. I don't really know if there's going to be much argument for Chilwell here.
I'm honestly not that big a fan of Chilwell.
I think Chilwell had an excellent start to the season.
He's dropped off.
Like a lot of Leicester players we like to bring up, they have dropped off.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the players we might talk about later is the reason why he dropped off. And I think Robertson was ahead already, but he just ran miles and miles ahead.
Mm-hmm.
If Pereira was on the left-hand side, we'd maybe have more debate, but other than that, I don't think it really is.
I think even though for Robertson, he's not matched the level that Trent set, I would say, and I think you could probably all agree with me on that. Trent's having an unprecedented season. But the thing is, he's still consistently excellent, Robertson. He's still consistently very good.
I think there could be a case to say he's perhaps a better... he's probably a better fullback in terms of defensive capabilities.
Yeah, uh-huh.
I think if you're an attacker and you want to come up against Robertson or Alexander-Arnold, you probably would rather come up against Alexander at the moment, I think.
That being said...
That's just me personally. I Graham will have a better idea, but just from what I've seen, I think Robertson would probably be a better defender, but obviously Trent Alexander-Arnold is much better going forward and attacking.
I mean, that being said, I mean, not including Champions League, as we know, he's scored a couple in there and assisted. He's still got a goal and 7 assists from left-back, which is no mean feat at all. So, I mean, he's still contributing attacking-wise, but I think he has kind of taken more of a defensive role this season and let Trent kind of run the show.
He plays the important role as well on the team. He's the arsehole of the team.
Yeah.
He is the guy that will annoy other players. I think every team kind of does need a one to like that.
100%.
And sometimes he might go a bit overboard, but he's amazing.
I'd imagine he's quite a leader in the dressing room as well.
Oh, he'll be vocal. He's Scottish. Well, yeah,
he'll be one of the big voices.
Don't shut him up.
No. Him patting Lionel Messi on the head after the 4-0 last season just always springs to mind. Like, that's just...
I remember the challenge he made against Ronaldo in the 3-1 Champions League 2 seasons ago. It was unbelievable.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That was one of Ronaldo quiet a couple.
Yeah, that was one of that. Yeah, exactly. That kept Ronaldo from scoring. That was one of my things I always take away from that game. Obviously, the Bale bicycle kick and then that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that kind of, and then Chilwell, he still had a decent season, but he has really like most of the Leicester team just kind of had a real dip since the new year began, really. I mean, kind of end of December into January, there was a really bad patch of form for them, and they never really properly recovered from it. It kind of seems that long ago that the 9-0 against Southampton was now. It seems years ago almost.
But I reckon if the two of them had met again when the season just before it stopped, I reckon Southampton would have won.
Did they not?
Yeah, they did.
Did they? Yeah.
Uh-huh. They went
2-1.
You're right.
What a prediction that was, by the way. See, for prediction of the season, I think I've just won it.
Wow, sure. How did you manage to predict that?
Well, you're away with that because it was so long ago that you've probably forgotten.
Football's been so long ago, realistically. What game week would we be in just now?
20, 30.
Oh, God. Oh, I miss it, boys. I'm missing it.
I miss it.
Well, that's kind of open and shut case for fullbacks then. A Liverpool combination of Trent Alexander-Arnold at right back and Andy Robertson at left back. So we're going to get
goals. Didn't even get my tiny part from my argument now.
Well, what is your argument going to be there?
Matt Doherty. I'm telling you, that was my argument for him. But I'm already outweighed. But I'm
for left back. For left back, he's a right sided player.
Yeah.
I have an interesting point about Doherty and Jota for Wolves. Would you consider them in the same category, and it's the same with Enda Stevens and Baldock necessarily, as fullbacks because of the way their teams play? They don't really do the same defensive.
In a team in a season, yes.
In a team in a season, yes. But I see them as, I say, Marcos Alonso.
Oh, I see them as a wingback.
Wingbacks, like very good wingbacks, would be poor at fullback.
Yeah.
See, I was just going to do an argument for Devil Advocate there. Just seems like it's a more defensive like fullback. I feel like Doherty is the best out of them all, as he's won the most duels out of all the basically the most juice. In fact, I think he's actually behind Trent. But it just is we all know that Wolves play a wing back formation, so it's like obviously he's up and down constantly, getting on the ball more, chilling more than what Robertson would be doing, even though his Liverpool are always in the front foot anyway. But this is just his stats as a solid fullback would be for this anyway is unreal.
Right, we'll move on because we spent 25 minutes talking about a goalkeeper and fullbacks, and we want to try and keep this. I think we might need to end up splitting this up a wee bit. So, centre-backs, I've got a number of options. We're playing two, of course, in our 4-3-3. So we've got Virgil van Dijk, Joel Gomez, Kagler Soyuncu, Johnny Evans, Chris Basham, Jack O'Connell, Harry Maguire, and James Tarkowski. First things first, have we all got big Virg?
Yes, we can pencil
yes,
in.
Yes, I think we're all agreed
penciled
on that
in. 100%. Penciled in and underlined. There we go. I think he kind of speaks for himself. Again, we don't really need to spend an awful lot of time talking about Virg. I mean, I think this season he's really broken out as a leader, like a leader amongst that team. And when Henderson's been missing, he's stepped up and really kind of commanded the team from centre.
He's almost
back.
Like the captain without the armband on the pitch.
Exactly. Well put.
I think one game that shows that was what he scored two goals against him. I think he got the first two goals.
Who was that?
I can't remember who it was against, but
Brighton.
Graham, help me out here.
Brighton.
Basically, that shows you because I think he got I think he got the only two goals in that game.
They went 2-1.
It just shows the leader.
Aye, well, he does lead from the back. I mean, he's got a couple out. He's got four goals, I think it is, in the league. He's got the most passes completed out of anyone in the entire league, which shows a lot of Liverpool's play does come from him. I mean, 2,478 is the number, averaging 85 per game.
Ridiculous.
67 headed clearances, 143 aerial duels won. He's huge in the air. I just think he's kind of speaks for himself, really. Like, you don't really need to. There's not really much argument against him.
Yeah.
No, I think he's every striker's worst dream. I think it was Troy Deeney that made the point that he even smells nice as well.
Troy Deeney would say that. he's always saying stuff like that. This is where it comes into question a bit more. This is where we might actually have a good wee debate here. Seven names for one space here. Does anyone want to throw in someone to consider?
I don't think it's going to be any secret that I am going to say Harry Maguire, but
colour me surprised.
I just think he's had a phenomenal season coming in, a huge price tag, heavy on his shoulders. It was the same as when Van Dijk first moved to Liverpool. And that's not a comparison between the two. Van Dijk's miles ahead. But when Van Dijk came, he could only do bad for that price tag, and it was the same with Maguire. I think a lot of people were just, you know, oh, unless he keeps 30 clean sheets or whatever, is a waste. But I think he's had a phenomenal season, captain of the club within a few months, which is definitely a great personal achievement for him. He's led from the back. He's played every minute, tore a muscle in his hip against Wolves in the FA Cup, I believe it was, and he's played on from then. Him and Lindelof have not made any errors leading to goals this season in 26 games. If you compare that to last season's United defence, there was 8. And I just think you can see how much of a difference he's made to that defence since coming through. And yeah, I just think centre-back, apart from Van Dijk, there hasn't really been many standout names, but I think Harry Maguire for me definitely deserves the praise.
Graham, are you going to argue Joel Gomez as Van Dijk's partner?
No, I'm not. I'm not going to do it for the team this season. I think he's not played enough.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I am torn in this one still. I think it is either Maguire, I think Struan is right, but I think I will pick Johnny Evans for me.
Nice, okay.
I think this season for Leicester, for a lot of people, Soyuncu has been given more credit, and I don't agree that he's been better. I think Soyuncu is the flashier defender. He makes the side tackles and the rampage and blocks, but Evans is the better of two centre-backs.
He's tidier. He's more composed.
He's more composed. He doesn't have to... I feel like a centre-back that has to make these latch-stitch things, that's ultimately a negative thing because they shouldn't have to be in that position. Their position should be good enough that they can cover themselves and make things easy, and Evans does that. Because of that, he doesn't get the praise he deserves, maybe, because he doesn't get the plaudits because there's not these massive highlights. But he's been incredibly solid for a Leicester side that are one of the best defences in the league. And I think I would go for Johnny Evans as my centre back.
Taylor, who would you say?
I'm going to go against what Graham just said. I think Soyuncu is the better defender in that team, and I feel like he, let's be honest, he had big boots to fill when he first came into Leicester team, because everybody loved Maguire and he went for a big price, and basically they're looking for somebody to come in and not essentially be as good, but just basically just do a job in there, and Soyuncu proved to be a lot better than that. Like, I could arguably say that he's better than Harry Maguire was at Leicester right now. He's just, he's solid, strong, fast, and I know what Graham says about basically a defender shouldn't be making last-ditch tackles because he should be in a bit, good position to start off with, but that just shows the fact that his desire not to give up, and that in fact, I don't think he gives away that many fouls. I think he's only gave away, I think it's like 8% of his tackles, or it's a ridiculous low number. I've not got my stats to hand here, but it's a ridiculous low number, percentage of his tackles as actual fouls. So it shows that he can, he's really concentrating and good at tackling. But I think he makes Evans look as good as he does.
Well, this is a situation because we've all come up with a different centre back for this second slot. I went for Jack O'Connell from Sheffield United. Out of a kind of high flying centre back trifecta that has been played at Sheffield United this season, he's been the most active. He's been the most active in terms of defensive contributions. 127 clearances, 164 recoveries, 155 duels won, and 114 aerial duels being won as well. He has been all over the place at the back, and in a good way. In a good way, not in a terrible way. While kind of fantasy football classified Lundstrom as a centre back, but we all know he was a midfielder. And against who was it, Basham and John Egan. One thing Jack O'Connell has on them, he's only 25, I think, compared to Basham at 31 and Egan at 29. I think I'm right with that. And I think in a season where Sheffield United have been really praised for their defence, they've not really been, no one's really been named. They just said, oh, they've had a really solid defence plus Dean Henderson. And I think Jack O'Connell is the man that has really marshalled that defence. He's really managed to pull everything together and make Sheffield United look like the solid team that they have turned out to be. So that's my argument, but we need to settle on one name for this.
If we're trying to eliminate, I would take Basham. If I was to vote for another one here, I'd vote for Maguire, because I think Evans is better than Soyuncu. Mm-hmm. I'd take Basham over O'Connell at centre back for Sheffield United. So if I was to vote on one of your guys for the second place, I'd vote for Harry Maguire.
I'll stick my vote with Maguire.
Can you have a second opinion?
Do you have a second opinion in case it does go to that?
I'd probably say Johnny Evans.
I'd probably say Evans, to be honest. He's the tidier of the Leicester defenders. So
that's Johnny Evans then?
Johnny Evans.
I say Evans as well, yeah.
Johnny Evans partners Virgil van Dijk after all that. There we go. That's a good wee pairing, I think, that kid.
Mm-hmm. That's true, not talking for the rest of the episode.
I mean, he is ex-United. I like Johnny Evans. It's kind of weird, though, isn't it? Three seasons ago when he was at West Brom, and then he took no notice. And then when he was leaving, you know, Man City were tipped to buy him, and people were saying, oh, why are they going after Johnny Evans? That's ridiculous. But I think now it's proved he is still
a very
good defender.
He's been underrated for years, and this is where I've been able to appreciate him.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to what I think... sorry, Taylor.
Oh, sorry, let me interrupt you. I was going to say, if he was English, ugh, if I can speak, if he was English, I think he'd be highly rated, more like, he'd be up there, like, basically talked about Joe Gomez and all that.
I think it's hard to say, he's 31 as well, so yeah. It's hard to kind of talk about him being the next best thing when he's got about 3-4 years left on him.
Oh, no, I was meaning, like, when he was at Man United and all that, yeah. I still feel like he was underrated even then. Like, obviously, he had Phil Jones, you know, compete with as well, which is,
I think,
not
when you look
at that competition.
When Evans was sold, if you look back to the centre halves at Man United at the time, you'd probably say he was the wrong one to sell.
Yeah.
Right, we'll move on. We'll move on because this is probably going to take up the bulk of this edition of the show. We've got three centre mid roles to fill, and this is going to be no easy task. I'll read out the names we've got. We've got Wilfred Ndidi, We've got Jordan Henderson. We've got Wijnaldum. We've got Kevin De Bruyne. We've got James Maddison. We've got Jack Grealish, Mateo Kovacic, and our man John Fleck.
De Bruyne's in.
Yeah,
De Bruyne's in.
Yeah, De Bruyne's in. He's in. Yeah, 100%. Let's
save the conversation for De Bruyne for a little bit later on for something else.
For something else that we're going to be talking about.
But he is in that team.
He's first name in the sheet, realistically, yes, out of everyone. So that's open and shut case once again. Second pick.
I'll start. Oh, okay.
Then you go straight.
I was just going to say I'll start the ball rolling with Wilfred Ndidi.
Ooh, interesting.
I think he has been, in my opinion, Leicester's best player this season. He's very unsung. Often people go to the likes of the fullbacks, Jamie Vardy especially, James Maddison. But I just think Ndidi is effectively the reincarnation of Kante for that team. I think he just controls it. And as soon as he got injured at the start of this year, that's when Leicester fell away.
Okay.
And they had the poor season. And I just think he is the glue, that one player who you would say doesn't get the praise, but yet he does some of the most work.
I completely echo Struan's statements. Like, Ndidi is the holding midfielder in this team. Leicester's form has just dropped off a cliff since he got injured.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you can criticise him for not playing as many games as the other players, but he's the best player on the team that are likely to finish third in the league.
I'm of a differing opinion. And not in the sense that I don't appreciate Wilfred Ndidi for what he does, but it's just, I think I know who Graham's other player is, and I've got someone else. I've agreed with him in that sense, but I've got a different player because I had it envisioned in a different formation. Like, I had kind of one sitting with two kind of just ahead, and I had De Bruyne and then this player kind of just ahead of Graham's last player, who I think we can all guess who it's going to be. I had Jack Grealish in.
Why did you put Jack Grealish in?
I put Jack Grealish in because of what he's been able to do for a team that were tipped to go down, straight back down, realistically. He has become the star man of not even Aston Villa, but Birmingham, realistically. He's not put in a bad season at all. I mean, in the league, he's got 7 goals, 7 assists, and he's constantly looked like a threat. And he's looked sharp and a tray full of blunt knives, essentially, is the way I'm going to put it. And considering how the season's gone, he's ended up outperforming James Maddison, who I don't think has really continued his early season form as well as a lot of people thought he was going to do. And I think if the Euros were to still go ahead, I could see Grealish getting called up ahead of Maddison at this rate.
I would definitely agree. Jack Grealish has been one of the best players in the league this season. And it's always tough for that player who's in the relegation zone but stands out above the rest. I mean, in recent years you had Arnautovic and Shaqiri with Stoke. You know, they were clearly top quality. And I think that is Jack Grealish. I think he would walk into many sides in the top 10, possibly even in the top 6. And he's the captain as well, pretty incredible, homegrown. Always think back to last season when in that game against Birmingham City where he got punched by the fan that ran on and then he went on to score the winner, which was like
testament to him. His mental attitude.
I could totally understand Jack Grealish, definitely.
One thing as well, he's just one of us, really. He's just always up for a drink after a game, realistically. you saw him after they got promoted yesterday out on the lash for about 2 days straight, was it?
Yeah.
Something like that. You saw the pictures of him coming back up. Taylor, what are you going to weigh on this second opinion?
See, I've went with someone completely different, so I'm pretty sure Ndidi's going to take this, but my argument would be John Fleck.
I had a feeling you'd say John Fleck.
Yeah. A lot of folk have looked at Lidstrom because of obviously what he's been doing and all that, but John Fleck's been the cog and Sheffield United's workings. He's been the one basically pulling the strings, and I was going to use this analogy for someone else because I feel it works better, but you could use this for him as well. But you just need to use your eyes to see exactly how important he is for Sheffield United. He's actual vital. He's like, he plays in a central position where basically he drops deep and he goes forward at the same time. So it's like he's not like an attacking midfielder or a holding. But he goes out in the right, left. He's always everywhere picking up the balls and all that, and basically just trying to get into whoever's up front. If it's Musset or McBurney, which is, he's even got, you need to give him credit. I think he's assisted McBurnie for a goal, which is no easy thing. But I just, he's, the way he plays his game for Sheffield United, I think is just outstanding and he deserves to be in there.
Well, that is it's a very well said argument, to be honest. It's, I think, how do we go about doing this then?
Well, I think, unfortunately, Taylor made a good case for John Flake, but I don't think any of us have John Flake in.
No.
So it's good to get his name out there, but he won't be in it.
Absolutely.
Does anyone, let's just get the third guy out there. Does everyone have him in their team, or is he not in there?
This was actually harder to pick for me than the Grealish pick was against someone else. I was struggling between two, and it was the man that we're all talking about.
It's
Jordan Henderson.
Let's not whisper about it.
We've been foreshadowing Jordan Henderson for the past 5 minutes. I was struggling between Jordan Henderson and Kovacic, in all honesty, and that's with bias taken out. I asked questions about, like, because for so long I couldn't actually see what Jordan Henderson does. And it's not because I was looking at stats or anything. I mean, Kovacic doesn't have any good stats in terms of goals and assists. But to me, for a long time, he just came across as like passion merchant. And it's terrible to say, kind of, and now that I've kind of realised what he actually did for the team, I think in my team, considering my other two picks, it's more sensible to have Jordan Henderson in. So I've gone for Henderson.
I was debating him with Grealish because I was basically just all the midfielders, and those were the two, because I was set on De Bruyne and Ndidi, but I also went with Henderson. And to be honest, I think one of the arguments that I put for Henderson was when he got injured, that's the only time this season Liverpool haven't seemed like the best team in the league. As soon as, like, there was almost people saying, you know, him getting injured may have won him the Player of the Year award, and it is quite an interesting argument, because I think he, as similar to Ndidi in the sense of glue, I think as a leader as well. But I'll let Graham.
Graham can sing his praises here.
Yeah.
I just think for the longest time he was kind of seen as a guy that flopped. He cost 20 million back in like 2010, which is a lot of money back then. And I think the criticism was fair for the first few years, but I think for ages he's been underrated. Maybe Liverpool players overrated him a little bit. But this season he has taken this game to the next level. He's always been a player for Liverpool that passes forward, that plays the forward passes and kind of starts the moves. He's when he's not out, his leadership's missed, that passing is missed. And it's just amazing how good the team plays when he's in it.
Mm-hmm.
He just is the centre of everything. He's the guy that covers for Trent when Trent's dictating the play. He is the vocal leader. He has popped up with a couple of goals recently, and in the big games he always performs. I think he is nailed on to this team, and I think there's no way that he shouldn't be in it.
Taylor, what are you saying on the Jordan Henderson topic?
I'm not going to lie, I think I was naive. Just listening to you talk about it, I overlooked him because I just seen him as a player basically getting carried by but Graham's argument does say he does do the work nobody else sees. Obviously, he does the ugly stuff, basically know the glamorous things, but everybody just overlooks him because obviously the stigma he did have. But this season, as Graham did say, I did start noticing him a little bit, but I put Kovacic in my team, obviously because I feel like he done what Henderson couldn't do. Basically, was he did take games by the scruff of the neck and basically forced them to go forward. But that was my thinking before we came into this. But him completely persuaded me that that was wrong, that basically Henderson is a nailed on, because you're not the captain of one of the best teams in the world right now, and you can't say that you're not influential or good or that. It just, he's an all-rounded player. He does everything well. He's not good at one thing. He's good at them all. So I'm going to say mine's wrong, and I'd go for Henderson.
I think that's where my trouble was between picking Henderson and Kovacic, because I saw them as almost shadows of one another. Henderson was much better doing the dirty work and kind of shipping the ball away. Kovacic was much better carrying the ball. Especially since Hazard left, Chelsea have had no one with that real kind of dribbling ability. And then Kovacic was brought in last season and then has come into his own this season. And he is probably one of the best ball-carrying midfielders in world football. But I think for just what he brings to a team, I think he's improved defensively. I think his pressing, his awareness. This is Henderson, by the way, not Kovacic. I think he's just upped his game this season. And he brings something that isn't tangible. Like, you can't actually see what he... like, the thing that he brings that's most important in the sense of his leadership role and what he can actually do to motivate his teammates. But my question is, if we're all agreed on putting Henderson in, which
I think it's passion.
It's a passion, but I think, are we all agreed on putting Henderson in, first and foremost?
I think we are.
Yes,
yeah,
so
yeah.
My question to Struan and Graham, then, is why have hit both Henderson and Ndidi if they're...
Henderson hasn't really been a defensive as Henderson, such this season, though.
I'd hate to use football manager roles, essentially. Ndidi is the ball-winning midfielder. Henderson's the box-to-box player, and De Bruyne is the advanced playmaker. Which
I was going
to
say, Ndidi's more of the six, and then Henderson you see is the eight. That's the way I look at it.
Right.
And De Bruyne's the ten. I don't think they play the same roles, and I think Grealish and De Bruyne do play the same role.
Okay, right. I can see where that comes from then.
I think there's an argument that Jack Grealish actually hasn't played to centre mid as much. He's actually been a left winger most of the season.
Right.
And his passing stats aren't as good as you think. I think he's more of a dribbler.
Right.
Maybe I've got that. Maybe that's the opposite way around to what this actually is. But one of the either his passing or his dribbling stats, one of them is like way lower than you'd expect.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, speaking of, sorry, Struan.
I was just going to say, speaking of Aston Villa, I think one player who we probably would have mentioned had not been friendly would have been John McGinn based on the start of the season, but
yeah,
that could be another debate.
I think just last point, I think Ndidi's going to get in here, but when Ndidi made every Leicester player around him better, Grealish is a one-man team. I don't necessarily think that any of Aston Villa's players are around Grealish have improved because of the way Grealish plays.
That's a good point, yeah. That sold it, okay. So there's our team, Ndidi, there's our midfield then, Ndidi sitting just behind Jordan Henderson and Kevin De Bruyne. We'll go back through the names that were also on the shortlist. Wijnaldum, Genie Wijnaldum, again, he's probably had a fairly standout season. He's been quite good for Liverpool, but I just don't think he did enough, really, to kind of warrant a place in the team.
No. Should read Brave with season interviews. But it's a good season, but it's a strange player to like kind of evaluate.
Yeah. James Maddison, I think, are we all in the same boat that we would prefer Grealish over Maddison in our team?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
That kind of says it for itself. I think Maddison does a bit more of the dirty work. I think he kind of does play more centre mid rather than a attacking midfielder, but
another one of Leicester players that started well and dropped off, though.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say another Ndidi.
And then we've got Kovacic and Fleck, who Taylor covered, and me. So I think we're going to have a bit more of a conversation about Kovacic later on anyway. So that wraps up midfielders, which was a bit less of a painful discussion than I envisioned, which is good. We'll move on to the first two attacking players in the team, which of course are the wingers. We've got a left and right winger in this team. And the names that I've got on the shortlist for the wingers are Mohamed Salah, Sadio Mane, Adama Traore, Heung-Min Son, Riyad Mahrez, Richarlison, Marcus Rashford and Todd Cantwell. It's another nail on the nail on the head here.
I'm happy to play devil's advocate this time.
Oh, left wing, Mane.
Well, I'll just go ahead and say it then. Mane.
There we go.
Mane's the first one, without a doubt.
Go on, Struan, argue Rashford, I dare you.
I would agree Mane has been the best winger, but I can provide arguments for Rashford, but I would agree Mane.
I think We can talk about it because I think we've got Rashford down for something else later.
I was going to say,
so we can kind of go a bit more into Rashford. But Mane again, 14 goals, 7 assists. My opinion, best player in Liverpool's front three. And he has the kind of mercurial ability to win games single-handedly. So I think if you've got that, you need to be in a team, realistically. You need to be in a team of the season, realistically.
Yeah, Mane.
Lovely. That was simple. Right, yep. Second pick. Now, this one I think is still quite straightforward, but I think there's kind of more scope for a conversation potentially in terms of speaking about our other names that we've got down.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone for Salah.
So have I.
I too have gone for Salah.
Taylor?
Oh, I went for Adama.
Oh, you went Adama?
Yeah.
Oh.
What? Okay, you're first, and then you go.
Yeah, you're first, mate.
Well, Adama Traore has just been a revolution for Wolves, I think. His ability to dribble past folk, his strength, his pace, his power, everything. The one thing that was lacking for his game was goals. But now that he's started chipping in with the goals in big game, like big games, like that one against Man City, his game against City, was that basically showed you exactly his true worth. And obviously you can argue Salah's had, I'd say, a fairly average season compared to what he did last season. And I feel like others have outperformed him.
I think it's hard to argue when Salah had the season he did last season, when he broke goals per season record.
It was two seasons ago, Salah's first season, when we went to the Kiev in that final, when he was like one of the best players in the world. And he still, I think people see that season kind of expect, they expect like more in it more. From him every season, he's spent that every season, and he's not done the same thing, but he has been extending. I mean, you look at Traore's stats, Traore has 4 goals and 7 assists, and Salah has 16 goals and 6 assists. It's not close. He provides...
But when you go with that, though, you need to, in the same sense, look at, as always, the team around about him. He's performing at Wolves, they've been in the Europa League from qualifying as well. He's playing in the Europa League as well. I know Salah's been playing.
Adama Traore gets to pass to Raul Jimenez. Salah's assists are to players that we just seem to want to pass to everybody else. Yeah, but he's a striker that doesn't score as many goals. I'd argue it's easier for...
Yeah, but you've also got one of the best wingers in the world on the other side that basically has been potting goals left, right, and centre. As stated earlier, he's been having an unreal season.
They're pretty much bang on. If Mane's had an unreal season and the two of them are pretty much neck and neck and everything, that's been Salah's also had an unreal season that he should be in there too.
Salah's had more goal contributions than Mane. He's had one more in 22, Mane had 21. So
Salah was also injured at the beginning of the season for quite a bit. I think as well with Adama, what I would say is it's probably quite a controversial opinion, but I'm still not convinced by him. I feel he kind of goes in bursts. I feel at the start of the season he was poor, had the double against City, on a good bit of form, but then he fell away. I would always say Diogo Jota and Jimenez are the two better attackers in that Wolves team.
I do rate Adama.
He's a very good player.
The most frightened I've been this season is Adama Traore going up against our left back in this team.
And Klopp was the same. Klopp ripped him
to bits. Best performance I've seen from a player against Liverpool this season.
Apart from Ismail Assar, but we won't talk about that.
I didn't see that game.
doesn't count.
I was at another football game, so I never...
Graham didn't see it, didn't count.
I've never seen the goals.
That didn't count.
I think that kind of nails on our wingers conversation.
I'm happy to admit the fact that my choice is just... Obviously, I've been outdone, but... you know, that's democracy.
No, you argued your case, though, which is good. Yeah. You were 3-1, but still argued your case well, so...
I think if Guardiola was an idiot, and he played Riyad Mahrez the same amount of times he should have played him...
Mm-hmm.
Mahrez
would be in
the team. If Sané hadn't been injured at the start of the season, I don't think we would have seen much Mahrez at all. No,
but I think City have had 3 good players this season, to be honest with you, and one's De Bruyne, one's another player we'll get to, and it's Mahrez.
Mahrez is literally the definition of a super sub.
Oh, 100%, yeah, but he does. I think he does better when he starts. He scored an excellent goal against Chelsea in the 2-1 earlier in the season. And he gave us so many headaches. And remember when we would always come into the studio on a Friday, having said the week before, "Oh yeah, Mahrez nailed on. Like, you need to play Mahrez this weekend." He didn't play.
The season where Sterling and Silva have fallen off so bad, especially Mahrez picked up, and Pep's inability to see that has been a massive failure for him.
What I was going to say, which this probably is going to be a controversial opinion, but I think if you take Man City's 4 wingers, Silva, Sterling, Sané and Mahrez, I think Silva is used better in the middle to begin with.
I'd agree.
But I think on their day, I think you could argue Mahrez is the best winger. I think he can do a bit of everything. Uh-huh. He can assist, he can create, he can score. He's a leader, he captained Algeria to the Cup of Nations in the summer. I think he's a phenomenally talented player. I think Sané's still a bit young. I think Sterling's brilliant as well, but he's fallen off
a fair bit this season. Sterling,
yeah. I think for me, if you had to say, you know, pick the Man City team, you're playing Liverpool, I would have Mahrez.
I think
he's more of a game changer than any of them, and I think he is overlooked massively in that City team.
Before we move on to striker, we'll just have a quick look over the other names that we've not mentioned yet. Heung-min Son, I think potentially one of Tottenham's only good players this season, like personally speaking anyway. Mm-hmm. And that's with two very dodgy red cards that went against him, one against Everton and then one against Chelsea as well. Richarlison, a bit of an oddball inclusion.
No, don't rate him.
You don't rate him at all?
No, I don't know rate him, no.
I mean, he was attracting £85 million bids from Barcelona in January.
Allegedly.
I just don't see what people see. He's an average player that basically scoring average goals in average games. That's all I'm going to say. He doesn't really perform in big games. And
scored against us, what are you talking about?
His game against Lincoln. Game against Lincoln, that's all I can say. The fact is, he celebrated like Messi when they were 4-0 up.
So did Jesse Lingard.
But we just appreciate Ahmed El Mohammadi when Aston Villa were beating Liverpool's under-16s.
That's yeah, he went right
for over-celebration of the season, I think that's
up there. I think Richarlison's a player that is in a conundrum of position. Like, I think he plays like a striker, but when he plays up top, he doesn't play well.
Yeah.
Essentially, he's a wide forward, which I think it's both a negative. It's quite a negative thing, when I say it this way, he's not going to be. I don't think he creates an awful lot. I think he's a goal scorer.
I think he's better on a wing in a front three, but under Ancelotti, because it's a 4-4-2, he's either going to be out wide or playing as a striker. I don't think either of those really suit him.
I disagree. I think he's a great player, but I don't think he's as close.
I think if he nails a position down, then we'll start seeing the best of him. Rashford, we're going to have a chat about later. And last name on the sheet was Todd Cantwell, who is playing kind of above his station, I would say, or has done since Norwich came back to the league. I don't know what you guys think about that.
I would just say it's a cute season. That would be how I'd have
it. I think he's really well. He's kind of ignored in that Madison, Grealish, and Mount argument for like England's attacking young midfielders.
I would say deservedly, but because he's not really same. He's a wide player though. He's not really the same position. As kind of if you're looking at Madison, Mount, and Grealish, you're looking at them through the middle as a 10, not really out wide in an 11 or something like that.
I see quite a few similarities to him and Grealish, but
fair enough.
Yeah, he's not been as good as those two, but I think he could be.
Is the first similarity the trim
between? I don't know. I don't know about that one.
Well, there we go. We've decided on wingers. We've got Salah and Mane, as we probably expected. Strikers, we've got five to pick from one position. We've got Aubameyang, we've got Jimenez, Aguero, Vardy, and Danny Ings.
This is tough. I'm still not 100% sure.
I've thought about it for a while, and I think I've finally made up my decision.
I've got my choice down, but I probably could be easily convinced.
I could be swayed.
I changed my choice about 10 minutes ago, changed it back, and I've changed it again, and I'm sticking with this one.
If you're sticking with it, Taylor, let's have it.
It's got to be Mr. Reliable, Aguero. He's just unreal. The man has provided the good states game in, game out. Honestly, it's like, ever since that goal against QPR he scored, he just went up, and I just don't think he gets to reckon that he actually deserves to be like one of the best out and out strikers in the world. Because he performs like, I think it's the last five seasons, he's got over 20 goals. This season, I think he could have easily done it if it just wasn't for we know who. But the fact he's sitting 16 goals in 22 appearances this season just shows that he is the reliable guy for Man City to go to.
Mm-hmm.
I have also went for Aguero just to play a bit with Taylor, because he's got 16. It's very close. Vardy's top goal scorer, but it's three in it. Aguero has by far the best minutes per goal. 88 minutes a goal, so a goal a game for Aguero. He scores a goal a game, and that's not really... I don't know how many penalties... I haven't checked penalty goals there, but it can't be many because City don't score penalties.
I was going to say, I don't think he's scored any. I think he's maybe scored one.
They change their penalty taker more than we change outfits on a daily basis.
How many times do you change outfits?
Depends on what I'm feeling like.
It's weather-dependent as well, of course.
It's fully weather-dependent. Is it sunny yet? Not yet.
But yeah, I think... I do think he gets the credit he deserves. Aguero, I think he's one of the best strikers in Premier League history. I think he's top three. And this season, he's still buying them in. He's still scoring goals, still creating. I think he's under Pep, he's overall play improved. He's not just a poacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a tailor that Aguero should be the striker in this team.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I have seen Aguero has two penalties this season. But I've actually gone for Aubameyang. When I was first making this team, I had Aubameyang out on the wing with Mane on the other side and Aguero was the striker. But then I thought, I feel I'm trying to force Aubameyang in here. You know, I'm clearly with him. I think with Aguero, you've got a very, very good striker who's been in the league for, you know, nearly a decade. He's been phenomenal throughout then. But I just think this season, Aubameyang for me has been better. He's playing in a far worse team. Just, I think his ability, for me, he is who I'd want at the moment in the team. If you look at, not much for a stat, but he's got a better shooting accuracy than Aguero, who's only got a 50% shooting accuracy. I think in a game between the two, Aguero will get far more chances based on, you know, the attack inside that Man City get. But I think Aubameyang isn't living off scraps, but I think with the current Arsenal side, you know, he'll take whatever he can get. And I just feel... as a striker, I would rather have him. He has one more goal this season, so you can't really... He's four more appearances, you can't really use that. But yeah, he's also been made the captain of Arsenal this season, and I think that's helped a lot. Going through three managers, and they're desperate for him to stay. 31 in June, I believe he is, and whether he stays or not, I just think he's been the best striker in the league this season.
Before you go in, Jack, can I just quickly state an unpopular opinion here?
You can.
I don't mean to... I'm sure Raph Boyd, if he listens to this, will hate me. Is Aubameyang good at football?
He's just good at scoring.
I don't think he's got any like football, that much football ability. I think he's just good at scoring goals.
Sum up Aubameyang in four words: run quick, score goal.
But surely that makes him a good striker.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean we're not looking for somebody that just scores goals. Aguero's got one less goal than him, means a much better footballer.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, by the way, I don't think I've actually seen Aubameyang like dribble by more than two people.
I watch Arsenal games, and I feel like Aubameyang's terrible. I'll turn it off because it's Arsenal. I'll turn it off because Arsenal were boring to watch. This is before Arteta was like, and I look at the score. How's Aubameyang got a double?
Positioning is probably quite good in that sense. Yeah. Like he just gets
it's
in the right
it's
places.
A good finisher, but we're comparing it to somebody else like Aguero, who is better for footballer. I'm taking Aguero every day of the week.
Now, I think the decision is made. I think we are putting Aguero in. But my striker pick, it's a bit of a cliche going for the top scorer, but I put Vardy in. And it's not just because of the top scorer. Can I come up with a couple of wee arguments to make for Mr. Bring Your Vodka and Your Substance? Jamie Vardy, essentially, he came in and Brendan Rodgers built a team for him. He basically made Vardy the focal point of the attack, and success has followed. I mean, they're sitting third. I mean, I've already made that point earlier on, but the fact that he's 33. Well, there we go. And he had the team built around him says something about his talent and his ability. Top scorer with 19 goals, and he was probably going to get more. A goal every 0.7 games, I worked out, and a 33% conversion rate. So he's averaging a goal every three shots that he takes. So I've made the argument for Vardy. I don't think we'll stick him in. I think we've got to go with majority and put Aguero in.
I'm thinking of changing to Jamie Vardy, I have to be honest. I'm looking at his player comparison right now on the Premier League app, and he actually has some very good stats. Like I'm side by side with Aguero, and I'm kind of swaying towards Vardy at the minute, but I'm happy to just stick with Aguero.
I think we stick with Aguero in this sense because we're over an hour on the recording and we need to finish up at some point.
We've got plenty of days before we can submit it.
We need to what?
It'd be the Scottish
Football. Oh, we need to wait 28 days before.
Just
read my fun.
Move on.
I was having fun.
For any concern that are listening and have listened to the show before, Taylor's patters has not improved since we got out of the studio.
One day, Taylor's funny.
I feel like I've degressed as a human. I swear to God. I feel like I'm just slowly morphing back into Elaine.
I believe the word is regressed, not degressed, but cool.
One
day, Taylor, you will say something funny. Today is not that day.
Today's not that day. Well, yeah, I was going to say the day's not over, but it's kind of done at this point. Right, well, that kind of sums up our team. That sums up the main body of this podcast episode. So we've got our team. Dean Henderson in goal, Trent Alexander-Arnold right back, Andy Robertson on the left. A centre-back pairing of Virgil van Dijk and Johnny Evans. We've got Wilfred Ndidi as number 6, sitting behind Jordan Henderson and Kevin De Bruyne. On the left, Sadio Mane. On the right, Mohamed Salah. And through the centre, as the striker, we have Sergio Aguero. Are we happy with that team?
Yes.
Yes, we did a good job.
That was good. Nice. Yeah,
I feel like a good wee discussion that was. Yeah, we
only
did that.
Four fair. Teams, and if I go back, if it's the only one, I cannot show Evans or Maguire, but...
Yeah, well, that would probably be the only thing I would... I'd probably try and make a stronger case for Grealish, but it'll be what it'll be. Now, we didn't really plan this when we first decided to put the podcast ahead, but we are going to give our awards out just now for the player of the season, the young player of the season, and your underrated player of the season, because we all read The Athletic and I am a filthy stealer. So starting off, we've got the player of the season. I've put 5 names forward in each of these shortlists for each player to hopefully kind of have a fairly quick discussion, because I don't really want to have it going for much longer considering we're already past an hour. So you're getting more content in lockdown. How about that? You're all lucky. So player of the season, I've got written down Kevin De Bruyne, Sadio Mane, Virgil van Dijk, Jordan Henderson and Jamie Vardy. A bit of a controversial one putting Vardy in, but I think top scorer you need to kind of give a shout to anyway.
I'm going to say Kevin.
Yeah, I think we're all going to be agreeing De Bruyne.
That was easy.
I think there's lots of Liverpool fans that think Liverpool are top of the league, and because of Liverpool should win the player of the season. But I think what I've been saying to people is, as a Liverpool fan, is that De Bruyne is a clear number one, and I'd say like 2 to 7. Liverpool players. Mm-hmm. I mean, put Vardy in there for a different team, not just 2 teams.
Yeah.
But as I said, Liverpool haven't had the standard. De Bruyne has carried Man City so heavily.
8 goals and 18 assists.
With that as well, you've got the argument that the last 2 seasons Man City have won the PFA Player of the Year were Salah and Van Dijk.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it doesn't have to be from the winning team.
I mean, like Henderson, Van Dijk, Trent, Mane, and Salah are probably the next 5 in the list.
Yeah. Realistically, yeah. I mean, 8 goals and 18 assists. Realistically, he was going to break the Henry record before the end of the season.
I'm looking right now on who scored, which is like a Prem stats thing.
Yes. Uh-huh.
De Bruyne is 0.3 ahead of the second best player, who's a Adama Traore.
What?
And
what?
So it's not accurate. But then after that, it's like, so he's 0.31 ahead. And then there's less of a gap between Adama Traore in second and Harry Kane in 13th, and that's because he's played less. So he's miles ahead in that, and that's not just... That's
you
just
didn't even consider thing. Harry Kane for striker, I'm just realising.
Too injured.
Yep.
Wouldn't consider him anyway.
So my mate Zach, who's a Spurs fan, is listening to this, have that. I'm not even talking about Harry Kane today.
Kevin De Bruyne doesn't cross the ball. He picks players out from that angle, and he hits it dead on the mark.
Which game was it? Was it Bournemouth that he just like ripped them to shreds with? Oh, I think there was the one pass against Bournemouth, and I just remember thinking, "You're not human."
I think you could pick many games when he's done that. Just change the game himself.
There's a game against Everton, and just before anyone else wants to jump in a little bit, he's an underrated athlete. See, Kevin De Bruyne on the counter attack is frighteningly quick.
He doesn't come across quick, does he? No, but
on the break, there's two. He's a goal against Palace this season, and to go back further, Belgium played Japan in the World Cup in 2018, mm-hmm. and when the goal was a break, and he's just.
You're right. If there was ever a player
you regret letting go, Jack, it must be him.
Yep.
I don't know. I kind of think that's a bad argument because you never know what's gonna. What happens if he sticks at Chelsea?
Oh, there's so many, Taylor. Not gonna lie.
And like Taylor was going to play.
If we were sitting today with Kevin De Bruyne, Lukaku, and Salah in this team instead of Willian, Abraham, and Mount, then do you think I'd be happy?
I wouldn't talk to you. Be that insufferable.
Oh, he's trying to say I'm insufferable now.
No, not enough. I can bear you.
Oh, you want me to be more insufferable? Right, let's wait until Reece James comes into his own next season. Right, we'll move on to Young Player of the Season, which kind of gives us a chance to talk about a couple of players we've not really mentioned a lot, even though I think this is going to be another open and shut case yet again. So it's 23 and under for this one. So we've gone for Alexander-Arnold, Tammy Abraham, who we've not mentioned at all, James Maddison, Jack Grealish, and Marcus Rashford. Are we all on Trent? Are we all in the Trent case again?
Yeah, yes, Trent.
Well,
we've talked.
Stuart.
I'll just take this time to speak about now. Yeah, I'm Trent Alexander-Arnold as well.
Well, give your case for Rashford. Like, what? How have you seen Rashford's season? Because I suppose this is a point me and you can talk about our players who aren't getting a look in at all.
I think Rashford's been Man United's best player this season. I think he's had such important goals, big goals. He scored, you know, two against Chelsea on the opening day. Yep. He scored against Man City in a 2-1 victory, again in the League Cup, two against Chelsea in the League Cup, which one of the best free kicks I've ever seen. He scored against Liverpool as well this season. It was just a 1-1 draw, so it doesn't really look big, but that's another big goal. Two against Tottenham as well. He's just been Mr. Reliable. Scored against Leicester way back at the beginning of the season. I think he's been that man to rely on. I think his finishing has improved dramatically this season. Yep. I think he was on 14 before he got injured. And I think his injury as well proves how vital he has been to this team. The fact it's a 0-0 game against Wolves, he's carrying an injury, but he's the difference maker. He comes on, he doesn't actually score the goal, but he contributes. United go 1-0 up, then he gets the injury. And then from there, it's just been downhill. I think he could have been the top goal scorer in the league. It's easy to say, you know, but based on the season he was having, you know, he was taking penalties as well, which would always have helped contribute to that. But I just think just the dramatic jump he has taken from the last two seasons. Under Mourinho, he just kind of looked like one of those wingers who had potential. And I think he's discovering it now. He's a leader at 22. And I would just say he's had a very good season. But obviously, Trent Alexander-Arnold has had one of the best seasons ever. What I would say about the Young Player of the Year award, in my personal viewpoint, is it should almost go to a teenager who's broken through, not somebody like Rashford.
I think it should be under 21, because under 21 is like the youth level.
I think so. I think getting the award twice, you know, like Dele Alli, it's not really as important. And you look at somebody like Sterling, who won it last season at 24.
PFA's 24.
Seven seasons in the Premier League, and he won the Young Player of the Year. That for me just doesn't work out. And if Rashford was to win it, it would be, I think, his fifth full season in the Premier League as well, which is just a bit crazy, you know. How can you still be considered young if you've done all that? But yeah, I'd Trent Alexander-Arnold for me.
I'm not going to make a case for him to win, because obviously I'm on Trent's camp, but I think Tammy Abraham has been a bit harshly criticised this season by a number of Chelsea fans personally. He's our top scorer. He's got 13 league goals, which in his first... Well, it's not his first season in the league, because he had a loan spell at Swansea, but his first season back properly at his parent club in the league as the starting striker, having not done so before. I think he's had quite an impressive season. He scored a very, very nice hat-trick against Wolves in that 5-2 game that was kind of overshadowed a wee bit by the Tomori goal, which we all kind of remember. But as the third goal for that was excellent. He managed to hold off Connor Cody really well and adjust his feet and finish. And the one criticism that Abraham faced a lot was he couldn't perform against the big teams, and then went and scored against Arsenal just before the turn of the year to win the game at the Emirates, which was... I remember sitting watching that game because I was in New York at the time, and it was in the morning. I was having my breakfast and I just about sent everything flying. I think... Graham, no. I think he's had a very good season, Tammy Abraham, and I think we're all agreed that Alexander Arnold's got it. I think he's worth a shout anyway. He should be in consideration.
Cool.
Cool.
Yeah, I get that argument. Yeah.
There we go.
Trent wins.
Trent wins. Well done. Yet another accolade for the young man from Liverpool. Last award we're going to give out today is the underrated player of the season. Obviously a player that hasn't gotten an awful lot of recognition for decent performances. The nominees for this award go to Danny Ings, Mateo Kovacic, Wilfred Ndidi, Oliver Norwood and Riyad Mahrez. I put Ndidi in not thinking he'd get in the team, but I think he's kind of out of the running if he's in our team of the season.
Oh, I was going to say him.
Oh, well. Well, I mean, I don't know. Well, am I wrong with that?
I think Ndidi, Kovacic, Ings,
Norwood, and Mahrez.
I would only say one of those names is underrated, and it was Oliver Norwood, who was going to be. I'll be honest, I didn't look at this list. But I think Oliver Norwood, proper underrated. The other ones we all considered for the team of the season a little bit, they were in the shortlist. Mm-hmm. Oliver Norwood wasn't. He is essentially the third midfielder for Sheffield United, but he does two important things. One, we'll say three, he's a captain, he takes the set pieces. And he's essentially just, he's the safety net in the midfield. Flick and Lundstrom or even Sander Berger will move forward. Norbert will sit and just control play and protect everybody, the full-backs or the centre-backs when they go forward. And he would be my pick.
He also won player of the season when they came up from the Championship, Norwood.
I forgot you did watch a lot of Sheffield United this year.
I wouldn't class anyone's other ones as unsung or underrated players.
I think I would actually agree with that point as well for Norwood, just the fact that no one would ever mention him to be considered a team of the season or even Sheffield United's best player.
You'd probably see
the likes of Fleck and Henderson getting the call above him.
Taylor, what would you say on this?
I never looked at it like the way the game was portrayed it, but I went for Kovacic.
I did as well, but I just feel like
he's just underrated. As I said about Fleck, you just need to use your eyes. He is the player that physically you just need to watch and understand how good he is.
I think the thing is, especially in a Chelsea midfield that isn't getting loads of goals, especially when Mount doesn't play, he doesn't really get looked at in terms of attacking-wise or even just as a centre midfielder, but he does so much for the Chelsea team when he's in it. I feel like people just don't pick up on the fact that he's an excellent footballer. He's very, very good technically. He never often plays a final ball, but he'll play the second-to-last ball. Like, you'll get the ball to the winger who puts it in and then Abraham will score it. Like, he does a lot of work, just he makes yards up, which is crucial for actually getting forward through a team. So we can actually maybe transform a bit of just kind of possession play in the midfield to an outright attack. He'll be the one to just kind of grab the ball and go, right, okay, we're turning this into an attack now. And he'll just bomb. He'll just go forward, take it past one, two, three players potentially, release it to the winger who can put the ball into Abraham. And then should be a goal, but knowing Chelsea, we don't really have much luck. That's the point I'll argue for Kovacic, and I do understand the point for Norwood in terms of we've not really considered him for anything.
I think I quite like Graham's point that, like, with Kovacic, he is Chelsea's best player of the season. Mm-hmm. Chelsea in fourth place as well. You know, it's not necessarily as unsung as Norwood, although I do think Kovacic doesn't get the praise he does deserve.
I didn't look at this. I actually just found other players as well, and I didn't look at the list, but Norwood was the first name I had on it, which is continue you had him on. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect that. I think that kind of speaks volumes for him. I had some other weird players on there. I had, like, Dwight McNeil from Burnley was on that list. I thought Basham. I thought Philip Billing was good for Bournemouth. Jordan Ayew, your boy.
Yes!
That's the kind of names I was looking at more for that.
That's fair enough.
If you have that criteria, I don't mind. I think Kovacic is sound if you like to pick Kovacic, but it's just a different criteria.
Well, no, I think I do like your way of looking at it, though. So I think we're kind of probably a toss-up between the two.
Why don't we have both?
Would we do a shared award?
Why don't we do a wee slash?
A shared award? No, that doesn't really happen, does it?
If we can't decide, let's just null and void the whole thing.
We could. It's not always an award you necessarily see, is it? You know. So
no.
We could
I mean, the PFA don't do one, do they?
Yeah. Can you imagine the controversy of that?
I think they don't because of the kind of like the openness of the category. Is it a player that's just is excellent and maybe not classed as the best, or is it a player that's not talked about as much?
I'm quite happy to concede, having said my point about Kovacic, and he gets a lot of praise from the Chelsea fan base. I know that certainly, and while he might not get picked up a lot from the wider media and the wider kind of footballing world, Oliver Norwood hardly even gets picked up by a lot of people that watch Sheffield United games and don't really and are much more attracted to
Kovacic. Kovacic is Chelsea's best for Norwood, so sixth or seventh name you mentioned at Sheffield United.
Well, you know what? There we go. I think that's decided it. Oliver Norwood is our underrated player of the season.
Excellent.
And that wraps up today. That wraps up this the inaugural episode, the debut of the new Fantasy Ramble. It's good to be back. We've not really got anything planned for doing another one of these in the near future, but we will workshop some things, we'll think over some things, and we'll be back to you with at least one more before we go back to you.
We should make a TikTok.
Keep an eye out for our classic matches and season reviews.
Absolutely, yeah. Keep your eyes peeled on Energy Sport for this episode going up, obviously, and all of our articles. Mine's up just now. And it could well be any one of the FPL boys, the TFR boys, that is going to put up their next season review after we've had mine and Jamie Braidwood's for Liverpool. But for today, I want to say thank you to Taylor, Struan and Graham for joining me and having a good laugh with me over the last hour or so. It's been good fun having you back, boys.
Thank you. Thank you for hosting.
Thanks, Dad.
Jesus. This has been the Fantasy Ramble. This has been the Fantasy Ramble. I've been Jack Donnelly. I hope everyone that's listening is keeping safe and staying home, and we will see you next time.